Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here today. Today, we have a great topic, which is very timely, especially here in the middle of the summer. In the year 2017, we're saying we are going to talk ticks, the good, the bad, and the absolute ugly. Are you now becoming more what we call nature phobia, or are you in nature denial and, you know, nothing's going to touch you, you're good to go, they're only bugs, they're no big deal? Or are you just sitting in your house saying, oh my gosh, look at all those bugs, they're crawling up the walls, they're going to get my animals, they're going to get my kids, and what am I going to do? Well, you know, I can say that many decades ago in the 70s and in the 60s and 50s when I was growing up, we didn't really think much on ticks. You know, we had deer in our backyard all the time. We lived in the Northeast. We really didn't pay too much attention to them, and I don't ever even recall having this discussion. Yet here in the last few years, it's been now ticks are all over the place. So is it a topic now that we're just rushing to talk about? Is it that more people are noticing they're having problems with them? Or are they starting to arise more out of the earth? Who knows on that? But we say, is it a problem? Absolutely. Is it something you need to know more about? Absolutely. And that's why we're here today. My guest today is Craig Caudill. He is the director of Nature Reliance School, and he is absolutely the expert on the outdoors, and that's exactly what we need, is an expert on the outdoors today. So, Craig, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Craig, I'll tell you, I'm sure you hear it all the time. Are we getting nature phobia, or are we getting to be nature denial, right?
Oh, absolutely. There's not a class, workshop, or event that I go to that we don't have questions surrounding this, and that's why it's just a pleasure to be here, because I like to wade through all the things that we need to be concerned about and take precautions for, and also to sort of debunk some of the things that we don't necessarily need to be concerned about and work through. So again, thank you for letting me be here. I'm excited about it.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you, because I think across the country, I don't think there's too many areas where you cannot worry about it. Hey, I don't know if ticks are in the desert. When I lived in Arizona for 10 years, I don't remember seeing them. But, hey, a scorpion, a rattlesnake, a tick, what's the difference? You know, but we seem to be worrying about it so much, you know, in the Northeast. People are talking about it even out to the beaches and the coastline. But then I've also seen a lot of reports about it on the West Coast. So what actually do you think the expansiveness about this is going across the country? What's causing all of this uproar?
Well, I think there's a lot of factors here. The first is just to understand ticks in general. And what I mean by that is, and this is why you wouldn't have seen them in the desert commonly, mm-hmm. is that ticks like moisture, and they like a woody, grassy environment. Therefore, the Northeast is ripe for that sort of environment, as well as places where I live here in central Kentucky and even on the West Coast. Those areas are ripe for a moist, wooded, or grassy environment. And so because that's the environment that ticks thrive in, if you have that, then ticks are going to be there. And that's why you're not going to have them in the desert. I think a lot of this also is due to certain weather patterns. You know, here in Kentucky, where I have a lot of experience with ticks, when we have an extremely wet spring, we have more ticks, just because, again, ticks thrive in that environment. And so if the deer are doing very well, then they are big carriers of ticks. And so ticks get promulgated and passed on and moved around and all that good stuff that goes along with nature. And so it's all a natural environmental way that brings ticks about to be so prominent. Right now, the Northeast is seeing such a large volume of them, and from what I can see in the data, they're not excessively bad compared to other years. It's just one thing I think that's helping give this impression is social media. People are talking about it more, which I think is actually a good thing. That way we can get into what is needed to keep us from having problems, but at the same time, we can get a lot of scare tactics going on too. And so we've got to weigh in on both ends of that scale.
Well, let's talk about the tick for a second. You said about a wet and grassy and woody area. Does that mean that Florida, I mean, hey, I live in New Orleans. You want to talk about wet? It hasn't stopped raining for 15 days, you know? And there's, right. You know, we've got the lichen is all over the trees and everything, big, huge clumps of it. And we've got, mm-hmm. we've got mold everywhere. So do they come in the south also, or are they just a northern derivative? Like, in other words, are they temperature driven? Do you need a really cold winter to put them off, or do they just go to sleep just like bears, you know?
You know, I don't know the exact nature of what they do in the winter. I just know that they are around. I had this discussion with a wildlife biologist here in Kentucky just 2 months ago. And this gentleman was trying to make it clear to everybody, because I was interviewing him same way you're interviewing me, to try to get more information about how they work on deer, because he's mm-hmm. a wildlife biologist. And, you know, he made it very clear that that ticks are around all year round. Most of us don't know that. Mm-hmm. They are around all year round. And I have found them on me in the wintertime. It's very rare. But they do go into a dormant stage and are not nearly as active, not seeking out a host as they are in the summertime.
Right.
So that is why we see such a heightened level of activity in the summer. It's because they're out of that dormant stage and they're ready to rock and roll and do their thing and find a host and breed and go on further. So the issue for the Northeast in particular is that there's a lot of carriers of ticks mm-hmm. in the Northeast, all number of different mammals that carry ticks around. And so we don't have that high volume in other areas of the world. And again, it is environmental as well as climate controlled too. So there's a whole lot of factors other than, hey, it's just the climate, or it's just mammal behavior, or it's just the amount of rain. There's a whole lot of variables that go into that.
So can we kill a tick population? Can we smoke them out? Can we think of termites here in the South? Hey, honey, you tent your house, you know, and then you hope you kill them all, but all you do is just drive them next door. Or, you know, can we potentially think that maybe a super mega, you know, frigid winter that'll last maybe 6 months might eventually kill these things off? Or are they just like, you know, the roaches and the ants, they always come back?
They're going to be here. And I had this discussion with an entomologist from the University of Kentucky here in my hometown. It's sobering to realize there's not much that we can do a mass kill-off of ticks.
Mm.
They're a very hardy little creature, and they know how to adapt, improvise, and overcome their environmental problems. So because they're so hardy and, a hard winter or any number of things are not going to be able to do a mass extinction, if you will, ticks, although a lot of people would like that. And so these entomologists that are studying ticks, trust me, they're trying to figure that out, and they have not determined anything that will be able to do that. Right now, you know, they're all on the same level of what I'm trying to do, which is just help educate people on how to know where ticks are so you can avoid those areas, and how to take care of yourself and what kind of things you can put on to help push ticks away from you, and any number of things.
Right, because, you know, in the summertime, we think about it, like you said, ticks are there all year. Well, in the winter, you've got a ton of clothes on, so you might not see them being around you. But in the summer, hey, you're more exposed. You've got pretty much, you know, 50% or better skin exposure. So I guess do they search out the human bodies to be a vector, or do they have another vector, like you know how mosquitoes, I'm telling you, I can go outside for 5 seconds and come in with 10 bites. If there's one mosquito in a building, it found me. So there must be something, you know, that my body just breeds off that these suckers find. You know, I think, oh, they just love me. Right. They can't help it. But so is there something that's drawing those in? Or are they just, you happen to be in their territory, so they're just going to be on your territory?
Well, if you go to their territory, what they get attracted to is carbon dioxide. Any mammal, including us, that puts off carbon dioxide is going to be attracted to in a tick. So that is why, you know, the more carbon dioxide you put off, the more attractive you're going to be, if you will. So, and this is true of all bugs, you know, bed bugs and ticks, and as you stated, mosquitoes. So that's an issue for us as we're walking around in a wooded area. If we also know what kind of things that they like, as I mentioned before, tall grassy area or a moist environment, and we're hot and sweaty and doing what we're doing, then, you know, we have basically put a beacon upon ourselves to being attracted to a tick. So that's something to be aware of.
You know, because we always like to go outside. You know, I remember being as a kid and even having my own kids, it was like open the door in the morning and they were outside all day, climbing up the pine trees, in the woods, you know, laying down in the grass, whatever, you know, always lived in the woods pretty much. But now, you know, we think about it because what is outside to us? It really is, it relaxes people. They're less stressed. They join in with nature. They don't have all of these connections to all this electronic crap. It's kind of, they just feel more at ease. They breathe better. They sleep better. They eat better. They interact better. They don't, you know, there's more space. You don't feel so closed in.
Sure.
So, but what we really are doing, you know, while that's causing us to be less stressed, kind of now the parents are saying that's the enemy out there. So now they're feeling more stressed. So, I mean, what do parents even like look at it? Because I'm sure they got to, you know, now my kids are in their 30s, so it's like I don't worry about it, but it's I don't know what I would do if I had little kids right now.
Well, okay, so I have a degree in statistics. That was my study at the University of Kentucky, and so I'm a fan of understanding the statistics and how they compare to other things. And so here's how I like to approach the subject of ticks. Yes, they are out there. Yes, they're possible that you can get them on you. And I'm sure we're going to get in discussion how to prevent all that from happening.
Yeah.
But the thing that we really need to understand as far as an overall viewpoint of ticks and going outside and what have you is you are very much more likely to get killed in a car wreck driving to the grocery store than you are to get a tick bite that is going to harm you. And so for those people that are scared to go outside because of ticks, then I would say then you probably need to stay home and never drive again, because statistically you're much more likely to have a problem doing that. And I know that simplistic viewpoint on it, but it's true in that I spend time every day in the woods in a moist, wooded, and grassy environment every single day. And there's some things that I do that I get very few ticks on me. And there's some things that I do to make sure that I don't have serious complications if I get bit. So with all that said, I would approach such a subject of making sure that we're taking a proactive approach to not getting them on us at all. And that does not mean not going to a wilderness environment ever. Yeah, you won't get ticks on you if you do that, but quite frankly, if you sit and look at a screen all day, you're going to have complications from that as well.
Right.
You know, in my book, the last chapter of the book is all about the benefits of being outside. And one of the statistics that came out of it that really just struck me when I was doing the research is that more prison inmates spend more time outside than the average teenage child does today.
Mm-hmm.
And that breaks my heart, because we know for a fact, you know, and I know, we all know, that being outside is good for our mind, body, and spirit. And so We need to do what we can to spend more time outside. Let's just be proactive about it, not be not falling into the hype and the scare that comes out on social media, and at the same time, just taking care of what we need to take care of that we can.
Let's talk for a second about the bug actually itself. How big is it? Can we see it with the natural eye? And also, too, every time we see one, do they always bite? Let's say we get four or five of them, we notice them on. Are they all going to bite us? Or,
no.
You know,
no.
So what is that predisposition? Or we also think of the idea of, oh, I'm going to get scared, and then it will bite me. We know all of that, too.
Okay, so I have some anecdotal evidence that I would not call scientific. And I discussed this with the entomologist, that certain body chemistries attack ticks.
Uh-huh.
And like one of the other instructors at Nature Reliance School, he seems to get ticks on him every time we go out. And I don't. And we do the same things chemically, meaning we use the same tick repellents on us.
Right.
Exact same. And we use them exactly the same way. And sometimes he will get ticks on him almost every time we go out, whereas I don't. And so there's something about that carbon dioxide that
mm-hmm.
comes off of him. You know, I know carbon dioxide as a chemical component. Carbon dioxide is carbon dioxide, okay? But whatever else is in there that's coming off him, it attracts mm-hmm. ticks. And so, you know, you might notice that. I've noticed that in my own family. And because I teach so many people, I teach hundreds of people outdoors every year.
Mm-hmm.
I see people that are doing the same activities in the same areas, and some of those people will get ticks on them, and some of them will never see a tick and haven't seen a tick all season. So I don't know exactly what that is. Now, with that said, I've probably pulled about five or six ticks off of me this whole season, and two of them have been attached. And I've pulled a number of ticks off my dog, who goes right with me. I mean, a whole lot more than five.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a matter of being proactive with what you have on you, as well as just make sure you're looking for ticks when you're out and checking and not bypassing, I'll be all right. No, you need to check yourself every day. Every 12 to 24 hours, you need to be checking yourself for ticks if you're spending time outside. And if you find them, get them off of you.
And also, too, maybe the idea that if that person is someone that really gets them all the time, irregardless of doing all the protection matters, maybe they're not the one that needs to be outside all the time, you know?
Yeah.
You know, in other words, don't keep sticking your foot in the fire even though you keep putting tinfoil around your shoe. You know what I mean?
I get that.
Yeah.
But with that said, I would like to make sure that we understand that even he...
Yeah.
The way he takes care of it is he checks himself,
right?
You know, and he looks, and you know, when he and I are out, you know, there's we take mirrors to check those sensitive areas of our bodies,
right.
And we check each other's backs because
right.
we can't see our back real well. And because of that, you know, you just got to have people that can help you, or you make sure you have some sort of mirror or something. You know, I've seen a lot of people that use their cell phones to take videos of private areas and then watch the video
right.
to make sure they're not seeing ticks there. It's just another method to check out and make sure you're seeing all the areas on your body while you're out so that you can pull them off if you're finding them there.
Right. So let's talk about first thing what you do is prevention. Let's talk about clothing. What do you wear first?
Okay, as far as clothing is concerned, there's no particular type of clothing that's going to prevent ticks. But what you can do is wear clothing that when ticks are on you, you can see them easier. For example, I do a lot of habitat improvement and wildlife study. And so if I go out into an environment and I have earth-toned or camouflage clothing because I'm doing some sort of wildlife study or something, then it's going to be harder for me to see ticks because ticks are brown. And if I have camouflage clothing on, for example, that tick's going to blend in right with that camouflage. So if I wear lighter colored clothing, then I can see the ticks more readily and I can pull them off. The other thing is to have as much of your skin covered as is comfortable for you to do and stay safe. So I see a lot of folks that recommend putting a neckerchief on and long sleeves and a hat and pants tucked in and taped up, and then they go out in the summertime. I understand that, but at the same time, you're probably setting yourself up for heat exhaustion. So do you want to deal with the heat exhaustion, or you just want to feel the tick on your arm and pull it off? So the beautiful thing about tick exposure is that if you see a tick crawling on your arm and you can feel it, you can get it off of you. If you don't know that it's on you, then it's going to get into a sensitive area and then attach itself. It sounds counterintuitive, but I prefer to go out with less clothes on so that I can feel them more readily.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they're going to, they work like little hijackers. So hitchhikers.
Mm-hmm.
So they sit on flora and fauna out there, and they basically wait till you come by, and then they jump on you. One of our students mentioned, he's in Wisconsin, he mentioned he was out hiking 3 weeks ago and came home with about 80 ticks on him.
Oh,
and at one point, he was literally looking down in the grass and watching ticks jump off of the grass onto his body and watching them jump off the grass and onto his dog.
Okay, that's
and,
a nightmare.
But here's the beauty of it, is that he saw them and he pulled them off. Okay,
uh-huh.
No problems. So, you know, you have to do what is right for you. You know, I teach a fair amount of classes where I have law enforcement or military folks that are laying in grass sometimes 12 hours at a time.
Right.
And camouflaging and reconnaissance type courses. And so the people that do that sort of thing, they're going to get ticks on them. And I've seen guys come in and tape everything they have up and, you know, tape their pants leg down, tape their arms down, and they still get ticks on them. I mean, the ticks are going to find a way to get on you. So the question is, what kind of clothing do you wear to either just simply keep them off your skin because you just can't stand the thought of that? Or do you have something where you can still do what it is that you've gone into the woods to do and feel them and get them off of you? And obviously, you know, at some point in time, we're going to get a discussion of the different repellents. But
right.
As far as clothing is concerned, that's my biggest recommendation, is just wear something where you can see them if your job or your purpose in being out there allows you to.
Yeah, let's talk about repellents, because there are several different kinds, but also to the concept of who you can use them on, who you should not use them on, and about everything from babies to animals, because, and even livestock are having these issues these days. You know, because I would be afraid of people, you know, thinking about, let's just see how we can find the strongest spray in the market, and we could just soak everybody in it, we're good to go. But, I mean, let's talk about the different kinds first, and then how it affects people and who you should or should not use it on.
Okay, so there's two big ones that we know work, okay? And there's very different ways that you should utilize them. And thanks for bringing up the idea of who should have these repellents on them, okay? Because that's very important to understand.
Right.
The two biggies are permethrin and DEET. And let's look at DEET first. Okay, DEET has been proven, and this is another thing that came out of this study with the entomologist at the University of Kentucky, is they took different clothing apparatuses and setups and put them in the lab and sprayed them with different chemicals. And I've seen the video of them doing this. It's incredibly interesting. And they drew lines basically with DEET, and ticks would come up to it and stop and walk away. And it worked exceptionally well for that. DEET can be used on your skin. However, you need to be aware that if you're going to use it, for example, if you work outside, you're a logger or something of that nature, a wildlife biologist or something, and you're putting DEET on your skin over and over and over every day.
Mm-hmm.
It's no different than anything else that you do too much. You've got to do that in moderation, or you could possibly cause ill health effects for yourself.
I mean, people forget that the skin is the largest organ in your body, and whatever you put on it goes in you.
Yeah, and your liver does not like DEET at all. So if you're putting DEET on your skin on a daily basis, like for example, somebody like me, if I'm putting DEET on myself every day when I go out, then what's happening is that I'm going to absorb that, and eventually it's going to cause health concerns for me. And I could do that probably if I squirted, you know, garlic mustard on me every day. I don't know, but it's just overkill for the body. The body's not going to like that at all. And you definitely don't want to be putting the chemicals, DEET or permethrin, on small children, because their bodies cannot handle the concentrations that adults can handle. And so I avoid that at all costs with children, small children. As far as clothing is concerned, you know, a better choice is permethrin. So what we've done in the past, And again, this is not a scientific study. This is just anecdotal study in our classes. We've had people that have come to class, and we've sprayed half their body in chemicals, other half their body haven't. We've sprayed half DEET, half permethrin, and just say, hey, when you're seeing ticks, where are you seeing them? You seeing them on the no side? You seeing them on the permethrin side? You seeing them on the DEET? And over and over and over again, over and over and over again, we're seeing people with permethrin not have ticks on them. Now, permethrin is something you should never, ever, under any circumstances, put on your skin, ever. And we've also discovered, and I talked about this with the entomologist, and there's a lot of chemical breakdowns and how permethrin starts to break down and why it works like this. But permethrin is not one of those chemicals that, hey, I'm going to go hiking today and I spray my stuff down with permethrin and it works. It works better when it's been on your clothing for a while. So as far as the strategy is concerned, here's what I do. Number one, I have, because ticks more often than not are going to attach themselves to you from the knee down on grass of that nature. They do climb up in trees and fall down onto your hats and stuff of that nature, so I have an answer for that too. But more of them are going to be on the ground than they are higher in the vegetation that's above the knee. Okay. So what I do is my boots are constantly sprayed in permethrin. I take my shoestrings, I tuck them inside of my boots, and I spray them down. And I do that for the purpose of when I put my boots on and I'm actually grabbing my boot strings, I don't have to grab a handful of permethrin while I'm tying my boots. Okay?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I also have a couple of pairs of pants that I know that that are my outdoor pants, particularly in the busy season of ticks like now, that these are the pants that I'm going to wear throughout the season over and over and over again. And I just switch them out and I wash them. And that way I don't have to take every bit of clothing that I might possibly wear and spray everything down in permethrin. I have those pairs of pants that I spray down once a week because even though when they get washed, permethrin will stay in for 2, 3, 4 washings. And it works exceptionally well.
So can we stop there for a second?
Yeah,
if
sure.
If I spray something, right, can I effectively just keep that as those pants and just not wash them?
Yeah, absolutely.
In other words,
and I'll tell you another thing.
Keep them for like the summer.
Yeah, exactly. Now, somebody like me where I'm out 8 to 10 hours a day in the woods, whether I'm out studying or because I go because I'm writing my second book now. And I go to the woods to write it where I don't have any problems, people interrupting me and whatnot. But I spend, every time I go out, and because I'm writing outdoor books, I spend time outside studying and doing things. And one of the things that I've done as of late that I'm not finding ticks on me, I'm just saying this is just me, one example, is I have a pair of gaiters, and I keep those things with permethrin on them all the time. That way I have my pants, and even if I wanted to wear shorts, I put the gaiters on, which have permethrin on them, and then that acts very well to keep ticks off of me. Because, again, the gaiters that I have come up to the knee, and because most of the ticks are going to get on you, if you're walking, that is, are going to get on you below the knee, then that helps to repel those ticks off of you. Now, that doesn't mean that the ticks will just never get on you, because they'll get on you. But they don't like permethrin, so they want to leave and get away from that environment. They don't understand it's a human. They just think it's a host. And, they want to get away from that host.
Right. Interesting.
So as far as above the waist, same thing. I would wear something that has permethrin on it. And the big thing that I do is I have a hat. And the people that watch me on YouTube talk about how nasty my hat looks. But it's not because I'm some redneck sweating in it all the time. It's because it's soaked in permethrin. And so the ticks that are going to fall out of trees and jump off of stuff that's high and land on my hat, they're opposed to that as well, and they'll want to get off of it. And so that's basically the strategy I have. And, again, I've pulled very few ticks off of me this season, and there's a number of people that surround me that have found a lot of ticks this season. So it's I'm not saying that I have the perfect setup, but I know that it's working for me.
So I have a question for you. Now, if you have spray your body with DEET, spray your clothes with the permethrin. However, when you're putting that on your head, and what's the number one place that sweats the most is the groin, the feet,
right,
and the head.
Right.
At the head, you've got the permethrin on. Are we causing potential absorbability of that?
Yeah, we do. And that's why I put it on the bill of my hat, because that doesn't make direct contact
so
with
not,
my skin.
So it's not like, and we're being a devil advocate here, we're not taking the hat and we're not soaking it in a pail of permethrin.
No.
So that's very important, I think, for everyone to understand that. You don't soak your clothes in it. You're being wise
and
in
some
how you're doing it.
Some people recommend that. And they make a solution where they take their clothes and they put it in a bucket of water and permethrin,
right,
and they let them soak there. I haven't seen any evidence that that's a problem. That is a problem to do that. But because I spend so much time outside, I take as many precautions as I can for both the ticks and the permethrin, because both of them are problematic, right? So
right.
I just try to use it in such a way that I don't get it on my skin. The big thing I really want to accent for people on permethrin, though, is this, and I mentioned this, but let me just accent it too, is that it's not something that you put on the day you're going out and it's going to be effective. It just doesn't work that way, and I wish I understood why, but I don't. So a lot of people have the tendency of putting on sunscreen, putting on bug
right.
dope and stuff of that nature right as they're going out. This is something you actually have to plan accordingly, and if you don't have the ability to do that, then you need to have clothing pieces that you can put on that are already have that on them, like the gaiters or a hat or that specific pair of pants or those boots or whatever it might be
right.
that you know that are going to act as a repellent for you. And that way you recognize what your limitations are as far as planning, because some people just, you know, I like to be fly by the seat of my pants too and just go out on occasion and just have fun. So that's why I have those boots and those pants and that hat, because that helps serve that issue as well.
Now let's talk, too, about who we put these things on, because, you know, there's a lot of people that have organic farms now. They have new farms. They're just learning it. So they're finding they're having that problem. We're finding people that have little kids. They're saying, oh, my gosh, you know, I don't want it to have around my babies or my children. And then what about the elderly who can't really check themselves? That's a lot of age groups there and a lot of problems, yes?
Yeah, and it's something that if you have someone that can't take care of themselves and check themselves, then you just simply need to do it for them, whether that person is a child or an elderly parent. It doesn't matter. I mean, if you recognize that, hey, they spend time outside and they can't check themselves adequately because they just don't have the maturity or they don't have the physical ability to do that, then you are simply going to have to step in and do it. And the things that you can do is you can help them with those preventative measures as well. Meaning, I'm not saying that you should spray a child down with DEET. I think you should avoid that. I feel very comfortable in saying that. You shouldn't be spraying children down with loads of DEET. But that doesn't mean that you couldn't have a hat that has some DEET on it that you put on that child, and it's not making direct skin contact, or you have a hat with a bill on it that has permethrin on it, and it's not making direct contact, because that helps serve as a repellent. And that way you're helping to assist them to spend more time outside and, again, to do so more safely.
You know, because we think about it, man, could you imagine the trademark if you could ever find a way to sell clothing lines with this barrier? Wouldn't that be great?
They do.
They do.
Clothes that have it. And the military in particular has mm-hmm. a line of clothing you use for, like, mountain warfare that spend a lot of times in this sort of environment that is impregnated with permethrin. Now, my understanding of this is this. It's limited, but this is what I do know, is that let's say me and you go to a rural supply business or maybe even a big box store like Walmart to get, or Amazon or wherever it might be, to get some permethrin, and we spare our clothes, and it's supposed to last for 3 or 4 washings. Well, my understanding is the clothing that is sold both by the military and for the public sector that is impregnated with permethrin can last upwards of 3 months of washings. And again, I don't understand how that works. I just know that that is, I'll say this, that is the marketing of those products. So the military in particular is not trying to sell those products. They're not marketing them. The stuff to the public sector, yes, but the military is saying that their products have been proven in the laboratory to prevent tick exposure for upwards of 3 months before they have to reapply any permethrin. So, okay, you know, it's out there. It's just, do you want to, you know, for your average ordinary person that likes to go kayaking and walk through the woods to go there, or likes to go hiking and camping, it's going to cost you more to buy that sort of thing. And it would be my recommendation that you just get some spray and utilize it on your equipment, including your hammocks or your tents and the clothes that you're going to be wearing in as you go in. That way, you know, particularly when you lay down at night, you've got that tent sprayed down, for example, with permethrin, then it helps prevent the ticks from getting on you.
Right. You know, I think too, what about the idea of when you're washing in your washing machine, children's clothing or baby's clothing, but then you're also putting in your outdoor gear. Should outdoor gear in essential be washed outside, maybe with some other method, you know, like maybe just...
You know, I'm overkill on all that sort of thing. And so, yes, I agree wholeheartedly. I keep all that stuff separate. We actually have a different basket for my outdoor gear. Now, right, that's me. I spend time outside every day. So, you know, it's almost a necessity for us. But it would be something that I think is advisable to make sure that you're not putting that sort of stuff, permethrin, DEET, and what have you, in large amounts onto children's clothing. And again, you know, a limited exposure is not going to be problematic, but if you're a family like my family was, where I took my kids out a lot, then exposing them to DEET at a young age over and over and over again is just simply not healthy. So you need to be cautious about that. I guess what I want to make sure I don't want to be alarmist, and
right,
then some very, very protective parent, mother or father, it doesn't matter which one, get some DEET or permethrin on their child. Their child's not going to die. They're not going to get cancer all
right,
of a sudden.
Right.
Right. I don't want to scare people in that regard. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't be cautious about it and do what we can to limit that exposure.
I think it's about making wise choices. I mean, you simply just wouldn't. I mean, if we're saying that there's warnings, then there's warnings there for a reason, you know. So
right,
don't supersede the warnings, you know. Go a
right,
step further and protect your family and your kids. Let's talk for a second now about the tick when it gets on you, how you get those off, and what happens when you create when there's a problem.
Okay. So more often than not, if you are continually checking yourself, and I'm not saying in the middle of the woods you have to take all your clothes off and check out the areas that are likely to have them, but you just definitely you need to be looking around on your body, on your clothes, to see if you're seeing any ticks. And if you do, just pull them off. It's not going to be problematic for you to touch them. You don't have to put gloves and stuff of that nature on. You can just pull them off and rid yourself of them. So now, as far as when they become attached, okay, this is another reason that I am a huge fan and advocate of recommending to people that you check yourself every 12 to 24 hours. 12 hours is better. 24 hours is a must. You've got to have a tick check every day, where if you're like, I just got back from Virginia in a man tracking course, and we were outside every day for a week. And so, you know, for people that do what I do, where we spend a lot of time out, you know, everybody's used to it. We just have tick checks at night. You know, we help each other out.
Right.
We make sure everybody's backs are, nobody has ticks. And, you know, we give them some private time so people can check those private areas and whatnot. But when it comes time to that, you find one that is attached. And let me go ahead and say this too while we're here. Again, ticks like a moist environment. And so the areas of your body they're going to be incredibly attracted to are the areas that are moist. That's obviously around your genitalia, your armpits, and around the band of your waist. If you have, you know, you have pants on, you're sweating, and you have, you know, a lot of sweat around your waist, then those are going to be areas that ticks like to find themselves on. A lot of people are wearing a backpack, and so their backs get sweaty. Ticks are attracted to that because that's a moist environment. And so those are places that just statistically are more likely for you to find a tick. So you definitely want to be checking those areas. And when you do, the problem with ticks is in that when they bite and attach themselves, they're basically laying their larvae, okay?
Mm.
So that's what they want to do. And when they do that, they're trying to take care of themselves, so they're using you as a host to get the nutrition that they need. The problem is that the diseases that they cause, such as Lyme and Rocky Mountain spotted fever and other ones, is when they bite you, if they put some of the chemicals that are in their body, in their body, into you, then that's where it causes problems. So it's really important that you grab the tick at its head where it's connected to you and pull straight off at a 90-degree angle from your body. And you don't dilly-dally with it either. You get a good hold on it and you pull it off. The reason for this is the more you squeeze on the body of the tick, the more likely it is that you can assist the process of them pushing basically toxins into your body, okay, from them. So there's, you know, I usually do it with just my hands. A lot of people, because I can grab hold of them. Some of the smaller ticks, you can't do that. So I do keep a small set of tweezers that comes on a multi-tool in my kit that goes out with me every day. Some people have an actual set of tweezers that they leave in their first aid kit so they can go ahead and get a good look at them and pull them off. You know, a nice addition to a kit, and this seems like one of the things that people miss, is that, like, I'm 48 years old and my eyesight's getting a little worse as I get older, is have a pair of glasses or a magnifying glass that you can look over your body, and that way you can take a look at yourself and see the ticks, because some of them are incredibly small. And I think I mentioned this earlier. I can't remember. Let's make sure I do now. Is you can use your cell phone to take video of your own body, especially in those places that you can't see real well, and then watch the video and see if you see any ticks on you. And that way you'll know they're there, and you can either pull them off or you can get somebody to assist you in pulling them off. But again, the key to answer your question more directly is to grab it at the head, right where it's attached to your body, and pull straight off 90 degrees and do so. I'm not saying you have to do it fast, but don't sit around and play with a tick and grab it and miss it a few times. Go ahead and get in there and get it and pull it off.
What do you do then?
I kill them. I usually cut them with a knife and discard them. And I try not to make contact because, again, whatever's in their body cavity is there now. That's, you know, one of the, I'm not a fan of ticks at all. So I don't want that to be on me anymore, and I don't want it to be on anybody else anymore. So I usually do that when I pull one off. Some people go the route of flushing them down the toilet. I think that's a huge, huge waste of water. So I'm not a fan of doing that. Some people will burn them because they get some sort of satisfaction out of killing the thing.
Right.
But I'm just about getting them off of me and just doing what I can to make sure that same one doesn't get back on me again or somebody else.
Now let's talk about the fear of Lyme disease. And you say that what happens when they bite you when you're out and you do take it off? Is there something you can do immediately or not? Or are you pretty much, hey, this is the path I kind of like leaped onto, now I'm screwed, huh?
No, you're not screwed every time, but you definitely need to pay attention. And what I mean by that is you're looking for, you know, the real common thing that everybody talks about, which is true, is the bullseye rash, which means you'll get a little spot where the tick bit you, and then you'll get an outer ring around it as well. The other thing to be aware of is if you've been bit and you start having a fever or a rash at the site, then those are things that you need to be in contact with your healthcare provider. The beautiful thing is that a lot of these issues, and I know you've had another guest that goes into detail with this, and I highly recommend everybody listen to that that interview as well. But, and I don't want to even touch upon that because they're more qualified to discuss this than I am, but get to your healthcare provider. Your healthcare provider has some options for you. It's not you're going to die. It's not that you're going to be debilitated with Lyme disease every single time you get bit by a tick. I've been bit by ticks dozens and dozens of times, and I have not had those sort of complications. There was one instance in particular where my wife, myself, and both of our children, and this is a really weird situation. I've asked a lot of people about this and can't get any answers on it, but there was an area where they did a prescribed burn on a national forest, and I'm a tree freak. I love trees. So I went to study and see basically the effects of that burn on the trees, because we know that that's actually good for a forest to have those prescribed burns. And I was kind of studying that, and the kids went with me. Well, we each got 200 to 300 ticks on us that day.
Because they were running out, maybe?
That's the only thing that I can come up with, but I'm not a trained entomologist, obviously. But the only thing I can assume is that the ticks had got pushed out of that area, and when we walked through the weeds going to that area, we got them on us. Right. And when I say that we had 200 to 300, we had 200 to 300 attached to us.
Ew.
And so, you know, we went to the doctor, told him what was going on. They immediately put us on antibiotics because they were, you know,
right.
healthcare professionals. Most healthcare professionals, particularly general practitioners, just don't have a lot of knowledge on how ticks work.
Right.
And so they immediately put us on antibiotics. We have had no issues at all with having that many tick bites on us. And we've not been diagnosed with complications from Lyme disease or what have you. So it's just you need to be cautionary about it. If you find a tick, watch it. If you start having any complications, you need to go to your doctor, and you need to be specific on telling them that you've been bit by a tick. And if whatever's working or whatever they're recommending to you to do is working for you, then great. And if it doesn't seem to be working for you, then you need to find another provider to give you a second opinion, because there's just so much that's not known. But in this day and age, there's so many complications and people that have had extended issues with Lyme disease that doctors are becoming more and more educated on it. And so that's a good thing that the people that we entrust to care for us, that they're getting more knowledge on how to handle tick bites, which is a good thing. So just get with that healthcare provider as soon as you can if you start having situations like that.
And I think the idea is that keep persisting, because some people will say, oh, well, you know, I kind of figured they knew what they were doing. When people say that, I just want to hit them in the head. You know, the doctor's not always up on it, just as you said. You know, they're not always the only source. A doctor down the street might have treated, you know, 20 cases of Lyme, and maybe the doctor down around the corner might have treated 2,000. So who do you want
to go
to, you know? Well, you can go to either one, but if you've got a problem, then you need to go to the other one, you know? It's sort of,
you know,
like
one of my doctors, one of my students is a physician, and he said it like this, and it's just so simple that it makes sense, and I love saying this over and over, is that doctors practice medicine. They don't perfect it. You know, they're practicing, and good ones without a lot of ego know that. They are practicing, and it's basically a guessing game from them. They look at a lot of information, and they try to make an hypothesis based upon their education experience on what's going on with you. And just as you've mentioned, if they don't have a lot of experience with the tick bite, then they really are going only on book knowledge, which is limited. You know, I'm not saying that med school is not good. It is great, obviously. But, you know, the experiences with other physicians and past experiences with tick bites is going to be valuable. So you need to recognize it about your doctor. And most docs are open to that.
Mm-hmm.
And you just need to, as you said, I like this word persistence that you utilize.
Right.
You need to be persistent. If you're continuing to have complications and your doctor's not wanting to work with you on it, then you need to find another doc that's going to help you as best they can.
You know, even, you know, when they come to me, you know, for natural medicine, because I'm a naturopathic physician, they will say to me, you know, but, you know, the natural stuff, oh, it heals your body. It does everything it's supposed to do. But really, we're all doing the best we can. And the whole idea, you know, you were saying about physicians is, I have always said on this radio show, is that physicians are not God. They're not here to save you. They're here to share knowledge that they have to be able to help you along your path. And the idea is that there is no God that will save you. You really need to take care of yourself the best you possibly can, and you need to get support from the people around you that know a little bit more. And that's how we walk through life. It's not about, oh, I'm just going to go out and defy everything, and, oh, well, when I get in trouble, I'm going to, you know, everything will be there to fix me. It's not a fix-me society. You know, we have to get out of that context that we've been in for many decades. So now the idea is of, how can you live in the world? How can you protect yourself? And how can you keep yourself in good shape going forward is truly up to yourself. It's not up to other people to fix it when you, you know, mess up or screw up, you know?
Oh, I agree 100%. I mean, I teach survival for a living. And, right. You know, the thing that surrounds everything that I do is basically most of these guys are, you know, alarmist, and they teach reactive measures, and right. You know, and they teach that as a hobby more than anything. And I want people to spend more time outside. It's valuable time, and that doesn't mean that you can't be an adrenaline junkie a little bit and maybe jump off the rock. But when you do, you know, have yourself attached to a nice rappelling system that's safe and you know
right.
how to use it. And that doesn't mean you can't go off. And, for example, just a real quick survival lesson is, you know, that doesn't mean that you can't go into the woods spontaneously. Just tell someone where you're going and when you expect to return.
Right.
And, you know, we'll save lives that way. And
being
as far as ticks are concerned. Yeah, absolutely. As far as ticks are concerned, don't go, yeah, I'll be all right. I'll just get some antibiotics from the doc. No, you
no.
need to know where ticks are and avoid them if you can. And if you can't, wear the right clothing, wear the right repellents, and check yourself. And you're probably going to be okay. Statistically, you're very likely to be just fine doing all those things. But you can't expect to get a bunch of tick bites and then, I'm going to let the doc fix me. It doesn't, you know, it shouldn't work that way. And I would just back you up 100% on that.
Yeah. It's a pretty tough place to be when you see how the path of someone has gone and you're like, I wish I could have helped, you know, maybe a step sooner or a path sooner. And I'm sure you've seen that, you know, you wish you could have just said, oh, did you forget that class we had last week, you know, or did you see that, didn't you watch that video that we were watching, or what were you doing that you didn't see that ahead of time? It's sort of like when we talk on the radio, and I'm sure you do with your classes, it's we're not sounding the alarm, but we're providing the information. And it's sort of, you know, open your eyes, open your ears, and pay attention and say, those are the billboards along the highway, and that's kind of what keeps me on the road. You know,
right.
Pretty much that's what we're doing.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
I like
you
how
know?
You said that. I really like that.
And it's so much easier to be able to do it that way other than saying, you know, oh, well, I'm going to get off every exit and see if there's food. I don't know if I've done this, but I've done this in Pennsylvania. Hey, you know this, when you're out on those back roads, we're going to say, oh, well, I didn't see any billboards, but we'll get off this exit, and there'll be food there, and then you run out of gas, and there's no gas station
yeah.
either, you know?
Right, sure, yeah.
Yeah.
You're
so
right on the money.
Like,
I like that.
Yeah, so sort of it's like, you know, hey, stay on the highway till you see a sign. And when you read that
right.
sign, you read that sign, you know? And I think that's the most important thing about life is about saying, what are the signs along the way? And should I ingrain them as gospel? But you can definitely say that, hey, that might be something that's trying to help me along the way. So you and I are helping people. We are saying, these are the choices. This is what your dangers might be. There are options out there. This is what you should look for. And we're not driving you crazy. And if you don't think, you know, that you're going to be God and you could go out and you're going to be good, go ahead. But, you know, we put up the signs. So you and I are billboard signers today. And I think that's the most important thing, right?
Yeah, I agree 100%. I like that.
Absolutely. Well, Craig, it was such a pleasure to have you with us. Can you give us just two bullet points that you would say that is the most important thing if you've got children under the age of 10?
All right, so the big one is check them a lot. Don't drown them in DEET. Those would be the big ones. Just check them a lot because they're not going to check themselves. Just take care of them, check them yourselves. Don't drown them in DEET unless you're putting on a piece of clothing that's not making skin contact.
I have a quick question. So could
yeah.
we potentially spray strollers with something?
Yeah, any
because
piece of
Because, you
equipment.
Know, we got to remember the stroller is low.
Yeah, absolutely. Any piece of equipment that you have, whether it is a tent or a stroller or whatever you might be pulling behind you, yeah, and don't get me wrong. I think I've emphasized the idea that ticks are going to primarily get on you, like
right.
from the waist or knee down. But they can definitely get on you anywhere. But because there's so much more vegetation out there that's at that height, that's why I try
right.
to emphasize it. So yeah, absolutely. I put it on the stroller and have no problem doing that.
I'll tell you, strollers, you know, I can remember I had my kids, I had, you know, in the 80s, and I don't even remember having a stroller. I think we had those little umbrella ones maybe at the end, but really they didn't have them. But now that everybody's got these big honking strollers, and then they take them and then they put that car seat as part of it, but then they're picking up the car seat out of the stroller and putting it into the car. So really there is no potential to even check there because, oh, my kid's asleep, I'm not going to bother with them. Ooh, yeah, you know. So I think we've created some systems in our life where we've gotten very lazy and we've gotten very heroic in the way we act in life, and we say it's not going to get to me. And, you know, to take a kid in a car seat, you pick up the whole car seat, you know, you sit it down in the stroller, you go out wherever you're going for hours on end, you know, to the park or with the dogs or, you know, a walk in the woods or for your jog for the day, the kid is sleeping, you'll just pick up that car seat and set it down in its stand in the car and go home. And by then it's like, oh gosh, that's such not a good thing, right?
Right. No, I agree 100%.
Those things give me the creeps,
absolutely.
I swear.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, so what if your kid cries? Pick the kid up, you know. It's like, I just don't even want that transference, you know, that idea. Oh,
right.
Well. Well, Craig, it was such a pleasure to have you with us. I think that we've given people a lot of ideas. Oh, there was one last question. I do remember this. Someone had Facebooked me the other day. They said, she went to the beach. She was on the Jersey Shore, and she said she sat down in the sand, and she says, what the heck? Did they follow me? She said, can they come anywhere?
Can ticks go anywhere?
Yeah.
Yes. Anything that's going to act as a host that is going to provide them what they need, which is a moist environment and the nutrition that they need, they're looking for it, and they'll ride you like a horse anywhere that they want to go.
Yeah. She could have walked through the seagrass, right, and gotten one.
Yeah, easily. You know, I'm not real familiar with how ticks are on the coast, so I wouldn't have a lot of knowledge on that. But, yeah, if you've got ticks on you, they'll ride you as long as they can ride you until they fall off or you pull them off. So, yeah, you could possibly run into them down there as well. But, again, as far as their living environment, if that's good enough for them, I really don't know, and I don't have knowledge on that.
I don't think you could tell a tick where it wants to go. A tick goes where it wants to go. Maybe that should be the headliner of your next blog post.
There you go.
Yes.
There you go.
Well, Craig, thank you so much for joining us. Can you share with the listeners how to find out more information about you? That would be great.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much for asking. Yeah, we have a website, naturereliance.org. That's my website that has my blog and calendar for all my classes on it. We have a Facebook page that's really active. It, again, is Nature Reliance. We have Instagram, Nature Reliance. I have a YouTube channel, Nature Reliance. And so if you want to get on the website, my email's on there. You can contact me and ask me questions. My book is available on Amazon, Extreme Wilderness Survival. And that book is doing exceptionally well and helping a lot of people spend more time outside and doing so safely. So that's all the ways you can get in contact with me, and I'd love to help anybody I can to spend more time outside.
Well, Craig, it was such a pleasure to have you with us. We thank you, and you will be back on to talk about your book, and look forward to that show
fantastic.
Also.
All right, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Thank you. If you'd like to find out more information about Craig Caudill, again, he is the director of Nature Reliance School. Please do check out the link on the bottom of today's show page, and you'll go directly to his website. And please, we cannot emphasize it enough. There are signs out there for reasons. It's to wake you up. It's to get you to pay attention. It's to say, I'm going to wave this sucker in front of your face till you open up your eyes. Because you know what? Those signs are there to help you. They aren't there to cause fear, but they are there to say there is a potential for an issue. There's a potential for a problem. there's potentials out there for everything to go great if you potentially make some of these choices and these changes. So don't be afraid of the outside world and keep yourself inside, but be able to say, I'm going to take the right steps. I'm going to say, you know, maybe I don't need to wear high heels and a bikini out in the woods. That wouldn't be so good. Even if I'm getting paid $1 million for that, that sucker's not worth it. But, you know, hey, maybe I should take precautions and I'll just be an outdoor person and I'll just enjoy my day, right? So thank you so much for joining us today. And please do check out the signs that are along the path in your life, because maybe they're there for a reason. And this is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. Until tomorrow, have a great day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.